Hello, Rumble, since we're doing this mostly exclusively on Rumble so that we don't have to watch what we say here. If you're watching, because on YouTube you can't say certain things like implying somebody got murdered without getting in trouble. So we're going to get into some dicey territory today. So thank you for clicking over. Or if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or somewhere else, where, believe it or not, they tend to be a little more freer with how you can talk about such things. Thank you for clicking over from YouTube. It is appreciated. My guest is Dr. Hoinovsky from Sister Lucy Truth. And we are going to be talking about the Sister Lucia of Fatima having been replaced. We'll call it a hypothesis, I guess, but you have a lot of evidence that you've gathered with expert an analytic opinion to have you convinced more that this is more than a hypothesis at this point, that you are dealing with enough evidence that if you were taking this to court, you would be able to make a good case for this, I'm guessing.
Sure.
So, why don't we start from the beginning at
Okay.
and act as if I don't know a thing about this, other than that
Okay.
I noticed that the two people in the Sister Lucia pictures aren't the same, and I'll try to put one of these pictures on the screen so people know what I'm talking
Sure.
about here.
Okay. Okay. So, okay, you're going to put the pictures up?
Yep.
Okay.
I will have to, in editing after this.
Okay, and later. Okay. So, basically, I was working with the Fatima Center for about 15 years, so very close to Father Gruner, and speaking about the Fatima message and speaking about the miracle of the sun, which became sort of my forte at those conferences. And everything was going along, and never was it really spoken of that there was a fake Sister Lucy or that Sister Lucy had been replaced. And then Tradition in Action, which I know you've heard about and your viewers have heard about, is a website. Dr. Marion Horvat was the first, when she put up sort of one page certain photos of comparing the women, an early Sister Lucy and a later Sister Lucy. The photos were very grainy and difficult to discern what was what. But it was clear that there was some problem, that that there seemed to be two different women, and that it just didn't make sense how they could be the same woman, even though one was older than the other. So it just sort of puzzled me, and this is back in the summer of 2017, how this can be, and if there was a replacement, what would be the implications, or is it just nothing, and people are making something out of nothing. So I went to my dear friend Cornelia Ferreira and asked her, "What do you think? I mean, is this something or nothing?" She said, "Well, it's see." She told me it seems to be something there, but you got to prove it. If there's something, it one way or another, it has to be proven. And by proven, we both understood it to mean in a scientific way. Because it's a big difference to be one person and to be another person. So that's a huge thing, metaphysically, biologically, ontologically, genetically, every way. So I said in exactly almost, I think it's exactly 5 years from today, 5 years ago, that I sat down and we formed a nonprofit educational endeavor to discern whether this was the same woman that appeared through all these years, and something about her life. What was Sister Lucy's life, and are these the same individuals? And if they're not the same individuals, what happened to one? And who is the replacement? So, but if there was no problem, then we would just drop it there and just tell the world what we had found. So we began to hire private investigators. We began to hire facial recognition companies who used various kinds of software. But before we did all that, we had to collect the evidence. So we gathered all the pictures we could from the internet, from official texts from the Fatima shrine, official books, picture books, books on her life, official biographies, and so on. And we gathered all those pictures together along with video evidence, because there's many videotapes of the later Sister Lucy, and there's some video evidence of the 67 appearance of Sister Lucy, and then there's one beautiful videotape of Sister Lucy in 1946 coming back to Fatima. So there is video evidence, but a lot of pictorial evidence and visual evidence. And then there's handwriting evidence also. There's letters from the 1980s, 1960s, from purportedly Sister Lucy. And then there's the diaries and the notebooks of Sister Lucy that we can look at. So we gathered all that information in basically 2018. And then we began to submit that information, that data, to various experts and who knew how to use the facial recognition technology, and also medical experts, scientific experts, forensic experts, who could look at the whole span of pictures and make that judgment. Is this the same woman who appears from the earliest years, 1917, to her purported death in 2005? Is it the same woman? Of course, that was our major question. And we had to, of course, date all the pictures to place specific dates. And of course, there's many pictures from the 30s and 40s, and there's good number of pictures from the 50s. But then there's a gap in the pictures from late to mid 50s and 1967.
That's the period when she was essentially kept in isolation, as the story goes, right?
Where she as the story goes. Or we didn't know why. We really didn't know. We just found out that there was no pictures. There were no pictures for that gap of years. But then on May 13th, 1967, Paul VI in Fatima to commemorate the 50th anniversary of the apparition. There are many pictures of that event and also video footage of that event where Sister Lucy was brought to the full display of the pilgrims, and Paul VI was there, and they were together for a short time. All right. It's estimated that they only spoke to each other. No, it's reported in newspapers from the time that they only spoke to each other for 3 minutes in total during that whole visit. And she asked for a further visit, private visit with him, but he said, no, go speak to your bishop about it. So that no further visit took place. But there was that event of May 13th, 1967. And then there's another gap in the photo presentation, and also we don't see Sister Lucy coming out into public from during those 15 years. And then she comes out in public again in a big way, you remember, in 1982, when John Paul II, after the assassination attempt made upon him on May 13th, 1981, the next year, he went to Fatima and met with the woman who is presented as Sister Lucy. And from then on, from 1982, from then on until her death in 2005, she was a bit of a regular in the media, in video footage, in photographs. Her picture was on books that were published, many of them purported to be of her own writings. And so we have quite a few photos of the Sister Lucy that appeared from 1982 to 2005. So there's sort of, according to the just the timeline, there's various sets of photos. There's the early childhood photos, which we designate as A. There's the photos from the 1940s through the 1950s, and we designate those as B. And then there's the photos from May 13th, 1967, and those are C. And then there's the photos of the woman after, who appeared in 1982 and after. And we simply said to all the experts, whether it was those using facial recognition technology or whether it was forensic artists who are, you know, specialists and hold world records in this field, or it's maxillofacial surgeons or dentists or plastic surgeons, or super facial recognizers. That's a new specialty now, super facial recognizers. Apparently there's people who are in such a state, an extreme state, that they can't recognize a face at all. They meet someone and then they forget them completely. It's a special condition. Well, there's the other extreme where they're called superficial recognizers, where they can remember faces from decades and decades and decades back, or can consistently recognize faces that are presented to them, or analyze faces in a scientific way with much greater exactitude than the average person would be able to muster. So we called upon a superfacial recognizer who was the best in Australia. That was her field of activity. She's now in New Zealand. And she worked with the University of New South Wales on these projects, these superfacial recognition projects. So we hired her. We hired a man to analyze the written work of Sister Lucy. And all the years, the notebooks, the 40s, a letter from 1969, a letter from 1980. And then, you know, as we went through this, the continual message coming to us from these experts was that the child who we know as the visionary of Fatima, and then the nun of the 1930s and 40s and 50s, the Dorothea nun and then the Carmelite nun, were not the same person as the woman who appeared on May 13th, 1967, nor was that real Sister Lucy the same woman that appeared after 1982. So they were different women, and one was obviously replacement for the other. And we you know, went a step further, because there's all, you got to get every little thing judged and analyzed. Was the woman of 1967 who appeared with Paul VI at Fatima the same woman that appeared with John Paul II in 1982? And expert after expert has said that they were the same woman. So we're dealing really with one replacement, one imposter. And the evidence came in over the course of about 4 years, and just confirming from all different angles, even mathematically, a mathematical analysis of the various parts of the face and their relationship to each other. And
some things don't change over time, like the distance of your eyes being, you know, as correct, they're set in the skull, don't tend to change over time.
Right, right. Exactly. And so many, the phyllum and all the different aspects of the face, and You know, and they looked at this and they took everything into consideration. Because, for example, we know that in 1948...
At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at ikea-usa.com today.
Because she had bad teeth, but for whatever reason, you know, all Sister Lucy's teeth were extracted. And she was given dentures. You know, that was seems like an extreme solution to a problem. But
that is an extreme solution to
that is
a problem.
An extreme, which makes you wonder, why did that happen? You know, in light of what happened later. But all her teeth were extracted. She was given dentures. So the experts knew about this, and they took this into consideration, and they said, it doesn't make it less likely that it's a different person. It makes it more likely that it's a different person because dentures don't do this to the face.
So an objection somebody would raise to this is, or maybe not an objection, but a question that they would have is, were these experts Catholic or were they Fatimists? Were they, you know, really, you know, the types of people who spend more time reading up on the message of Fatima and all the intricate details about it than they do, you know, practicing their faith or doing other things? Are these the kind of people who get really wrapped up in this stuff?
No, they were experts who knew nothing about Fatima.
Okay.
Nothing about Fatima. They weren't hired because they were Catholic, because they're not Catholic. And they didn't do it because of any interest in Fatima whatsoever. They were answering a question that we posed to them, which, you know, the implications they themselves didn't fully understand, because they're just, okay, they're looking at the evidence and making judgments based on their own profession. Like the plastic surgeon is saying, well, this can happen. This clearly indicates the most obvious answer to the question as to why these women look different, is that they're two different people. And this they cannot be the same people for this reason and that reason. And we wanted to be upfront with all these reports. So we've published all our reports online. Everything that we have is online, and we try to get them up as soon as possible, because we don't want to have anyone say, well, you're just filtering the evidence. And there's something else in the report. Well, read the report. Mm-hmm. They're very detailed. They're very scientific. I am not an expert in any of those things that are put up there. I am not an expert. And I was sort of amazed at their answers to our question. Is this the same person throughout? And for example, we have two reports actually of Lois Gibson, who holds the world record, the Guinness Book of World Record, for identifying with her forensic art the most criminals. I think there's something like 1,600 criminals that she identified with her forensic art. For years, she worked with the Houston Police Department, and she's also trained in dentistry during the 70s. So she's at the top of her profession, like all the experts that we asked. And she came back after producing, she said in her email, she said, well, I could do five reports, but in this case, only one is necessary. And she gave the report and she told the reasons why there was only one necessary. And she said in her email presenting her analysis, she said, it is impossible that these two women be the same person. It's impossible that they be the same person. based on the forensic evidence. And we also asked her later on, is the 67 Lucy, who you judge to be a different person, is she the same as the 1982 Sister Lucy? And Lois Gibson said, yes, she is. That's the same person. So she was looking at all the different aspects of it. And over again, you see the experts saying it's impossible that this individual portrayed in all these pictures and all these videos be the same person. So it was sort of shocking because it was unexpected for us. I mean, I had never thought of this really until, you know, 5 years ago, that it was even a possibility that there was anything to it at all. I never even heard of the possibility that there was two Sister Lucys. But sadly enough, we've uncovered what's got to be one of the greatest secrets that the Vatican holds to this.
In the modern era, at least, aside from maybe the depths of the U.S. government's involvement at Vatican II, which apparently there's evidence of that out there.
Absolutely.
Now, an objection I have gotten from people on this is, I got some angry responses to my short video I did on this just a couple weeks ago. One was, what do you hope to accomplish by telling people about this, by digging this stuff up, as if there aren't some serious implications about
it? There are serious, and the truth is worth it.
Right, the truth is always worth it. And so let's talk about some of these implications, for example. We touched on these a little bit when we were talking beforehand, when we first were chatting before we started recording this. One of those implications really is Sister Lucy, we'll say, going all in on the modernist heresy after Vatican II, it totally endorsing the crazy years after the council.
Sure.
How everything in the faith got upended after the council. She went all in and endorsed everything, which is strange. Given everything if you've read the things that she said in the 1920s and 1930s, it's a little bit, it by itself, that seems to be different. You're talking about different people at that point.
Sure. And we just ask ourselves the general question, because we have a letter that purportedly came from Sister Lucy in 1969, which was the year the Mass was changed. The new order Mass was put in place.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of symbolizing the whole modernist revolution that would take place. And we've presented that to our handwriting analyst, our expert, who says in a document in which he swears to, with the crime of perjury hanging over his head, mm-hmm. that the writing in that letter in 1969 does not match the writing in the notebooks and the previous letters of Sister Lucy from the 30s and 40s and 50s. And we have letters from the 50s. So, and it was a cleverly thought through forgery. And in that letter, Sister Lucy, or the woman who purports to be Sister, says, praises Paul VI, calls him the great shepherd who we are to follow, and anyone who objects to his leading of the flock, she says, is of the devil. In so many words, she says is of the devil. So basically, she is indicting in the whole traditionalist movement since the new Mass was put in place. And she continued that attitude until her death in 2005. I mean, she said nothing against, the prayer meeting at Assisi, all the innovations in the post-Vatican II church, and nothing challenging the third secret. Is this the whole thing? Is this what we are waiting for all these years? She fully endorsed that release of the third secret. She knew what they were going to say about it. There's even a video of her and I'm thinking Cardinal Sedano, but that's not the right one. Who's the last cardinal, the Secretary of State for Benedict? Bertone, Cardinal Bertone, right? She, Cardinal Bertone, took the third secret to Sister Lucy, and she said, yes, this is my writing. This is fully endorsing it, as if we're to believe that a secret which was to be released by 1960 at the latest is about the assassination attempt against John Paul II, which doesn't occur till 1981. Like, what sense does any of this make?
It doesn't. And this is where I get to the next kind of question, which is more of an observation. It seems like the purpose for this would be to bury the Fatima message completely, right, and to subvert it for the new order in the church.
Sure.
And to turn it into a sort of a reinforcing of the revolution in the church, as opposed to quite possibly a warning against the revolution in the church. Because I tend to look at the Fatima message in line with other approved Marian apparitions like Our Lady of La Salette and Buen Successo and a few others. And they all have a kind of a common through line of deep corruption in the church leading to a material and spiritual chastisement. That seems to be the common through line, which is why it's a little odd that her messages after, you know, the 1960s turn into an endorsement of the revolution in the church, right, and a condemnation of those who resist the heresies we see and the deep, deep, grotesque sins in the church.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's sort of shocking to see how much she went along with everything. And, mm-hmm. and it would, if we didn't know based on the scientific evidence that was a different person, it would be, we'd have to drop all our ideas, you know, about Fatima's about or what we should do. Because listen, there's a parallel. The more I've thought about it, the more I see a parallel between the changing of Sister Lucy. I mean, physical changing of Sister Lucy from one person to another, and the change in the church. They run, the changes run parallel to each other. The old Sister Lucy, if you look at the pictures, and there are many on our website, sisterlucytruth.org website, the old Sister Lucy sort of radiated the piety, the traditional piety and morality of the Catholic Church. I mean, and also her just demeanor, you could tell this is a woman who saw this Jesus Christ, the Sacred Heart, who saw the Blessed Virgin Mary, who asked for a miracle that became the miracle of the sun on October 13th. She saw a manifestation of the Holy Trinity.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, this woman, and she embodied that. She was always sort of serious. I mean, there's a beautiful video of produced by the Fatima Shrine of her in 1946 at Fatima, the real Sister Lucy. She meets her family for the last time, probably. And it's a very beautiful, but she's clearly a pious, very reserved individual. And then you see the new Sister Lucy. I challenge anyone to look at those photos from Sister Lucy appearing with Paul VI at Fatima, May 13th, 1967, look at that Lucy there. She's open, she's shaking hands, she's smiling, she's, you know, gorgeous. Look at her, look, I mean, beautiful skin, beautiful. And she looks about 20 years old, younger than she's supposed to look. And then her attitude, her total demeanor, she actually, there's a video of her in 1967 upholding the arm of Paul VI, like in a champion baseball kind of, you know, victory sign. He's great. He's winning. He's the champion. We can't even imagine the old Sister Lucy doing anything like that.
Right.
I mean, it's not even.
It's illogical, and it's almost as if they found an actress to play her.
And not a very good one either. They didn't find a very good. It doesn't, you know, like you see shows that are meant to portray historical events. You say, that's not the person. No, that's not it. That's not JFK. That's not the queen, you know, that's not them at all. Same thing with this. They got some kind of woman who is acting out the persona of Sister Lucy, and she's not very good at it. She's a very poor study. And
with Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
You see that. For example, have you seen the video of her receiving communion from John Paul II at Fatima in the year 2000?
No, I haven't seen
that. Oh, you know, remember the real Sister Lucy in 1916, and as one of the three children of Fatima, received communion from an angel. And an angel told them how to worship the Blessed Sacrament, and it's, you know, basically prostration. Basically prostration. And in this video, which you can see on YouTube, receiving communion 2000, John Paul II offers her the host, and she raises her hand to him, almost as if she's used to receiving in the hand,
which hasn't even been allowed in the Vatican anyway. Like the Vatican didn't allow that until very recently.
She was trying to put it on her tongue,
which was
sort of raising her hand to touch it, and then finally he gets it towards her mouth, and then she receives the host on her tongue, finally in her mouth, and then she goes to kiss his hand. Immediately after.
That's not what you do when you have when you just receive the Eucharist.
No, you don't. You don't start kissing the hand of the person who gave you it. And then, you know, she asked her security if she could stand right near John Paul II afterwards. And it's just, there's no way. I mean, it's almost like she didn't have any clue as to how traditional Catholic people receive the Blessed Sacrament.
Right. Okay, so with that having been talked about, why don't we entertain a couple of different kind of like hypotheses here. It's generally accepted that she disappeared at some point in the 1960s, for those who hold to this position, correct? That
yes.
That she was her last confirmed public appearance or appearance with trustworthy source, like a priest of some kind, would have been the late 1950s. And by the late 1960s, it was somebody else. That is the generally accepted, right?
Yes.
How familiar are you with the St. Gallen Mafia?
Not very. I know it in generalities, yes.
So Catholic author Julia Maloney has a book on the St. Gallen Mafia detailing their earliest known modern origins, including in the 1950s, with Ted McCarrick going to St. Gallen, Switzerland as a young priest, and all the way through Francis getting installed and all the rest of it. And I'm kind of wondering, because who would be able to pull something like this off, right? And the only group that comes to mind is the St. Gallen Mafia. Mm-hmm. And we know that they've been active for a very long time before Francis, because numerous people have attested to John Paul II and Benedict having their mail intercepted in the Vatican, a lot of it having to do with the sex abuse cover up and things like that.
Sure.
You know, reports of priests being, you know, people trying to contact Rome to try to get something done, and the letters just never getting to where they're supposed to. And it's speculation, but there aren't that many groups in the church who would do something like that.
Right. No.
Would have the resources and the coordination to be able to do something like that. But the St. Gallen Mafia is one of them.
You would have to be pretty evil to tell you the truth.
Right.
Just looking at it, and also have to be in control of the whole Vatican system, and because only the Vatican could order something like this, and follow through on the substitution, and then cover up the whole thing for all these decades. It had to be, knowing the Catholic Church as we do, it have to be coming from the Vatican. And
by the Vatican, we're probably meaning the Roman Curia here, the corrupt officials within the Curia itself. I don't know if Paul VI was behind this or John the 23rd would have been behind this.
They certainly went along with it.
Right. If he was aware, if he knew, he went along with it. And, you know, to show my biases here, let's just say I was a little surprised when Francis canonized him until I realized he was just canonizing the whole, he was just canonizing Vatican II when he did it. But I guess it wouldn't surprise me if he was.
He had to be disappeared under John the 23rd or Paul the 6th. She would have to have disappeared, because by 67, from then on, it's a totally different person.
There has been speculation that she was prepared to go public if the Pope of 1960 didn't make the message public, which would have meant people around John the 23rd.
Sure. She knew the third secret, too. She had written down, under obedience, had written down the third secret. They couldn't falsify anything. And why in 1960? Because obviously the third secret had to be released by 1960, because it had something to do with the revolution in the church.
Right. You know, that's why it's about the assassination attempt on John Paul II story doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because...
No, not at all.
I mean, why does 1960 matter for an event that would take place in 1981? John Paul II, Carol Latoya was, what was he doing in 1960? He was an archbishop. He was a bishop.
Yeah.
He
was a bishop. He attended Vatican II and was very much, very influential in the whole production of the documents and so on. So absolutely. And I think, you know, Father Gruner was always very specific when speaking about the third secret. When I would speak to him in private over and over again, he would quote Cardinal Chiappi, who, you know, he had heard from and through various sources. And Cardinal Chiappi said that the third secret is about the apostasy in the church coming from the very top.
I've seen him talk about that in some of those early Fatima Center videos where it was just him and John Vernari having a conversation across a table from each other, those old videos. And it's the only thing that really makes sense, because whatever it was caused Sister Lucia to only be able to write it under obedience and after praying for the grace to be able to write, put the pen to paper.
She could write down about hell, the description of hell, and about World War II, and get those out. But the third secret troubled her so profoundly that she didn't do it.
Numerous figures who claimed to know what the third secret was for various reasons, whenever asked, would say, and they'd be given these horrible things, like Hollywood-style doomsday things, and they'd be like, no, it's worse than that. And it's because an apostasy in the church coming from the very top is infinitely worse than all the nuclear missiles in the world being launched, because an apostasy leads souls to hell. People don't realize this, that there may be some grace for the innocent people who were dragged along in this apostasy, who didn't realize, who put all their faith in the institution. But at the end of the day, countless souls would be lost who might have otherwise had a chance because they embraced heresy. And that's what we're talking about here, is if there are people in the institution of the church who are willing to change overtly things about the faith, including its relation, the relationship of the church to the world, religious liberty, and these other things.
Sure.
What else are they willing to do? Because these are serious theological changes. People brush it off now. They go through mental gymnastics today to make.
We're so used to it. We forget the Catholic Church spent its whole existence defining doctrine and attacking heresies and being concerned about presenting the purity of the faith that came to us from the apostles and the Holy Ghost and God the Son himself used to be a thing. Now, whatever.
Now it's just
we're in the club.
Yeah, and get along with the secular authorities, and hopefully they'll let us keep having our masses and things. That's kind of what
You know what? Because there are interviews. There are interviews with the new Sister Lucy in 1991 and 1992 and 1993 with Carlos Evaristo and Cardinal and Bishops. And they ask her, well, what does it mean? What did Our Lady mean by Russia converting? And she said...
An end of the schism.
Well, we know that it meant end the schism, become Catholics, enter fully into the church. And Sister Lucy didn't say that at all. She said, it doesn't mean converting to the Catholic faith. It means converting to a system in which people can choose, you know, to do the good or to
yeah, that was the second Sister Lucy who said that.
That was the second Sister Lucy. Okay.
Just to be clear.
Oh, absolutely. 1992. So by then.
Conveniently after the Cold War is over, she says this.
Right, absolutely. So what it means changing to a liberal democracy with religious liberty. That's what she said.
I'm going to tell you another objection people have, and it's more like the source of a lot of these objections, and that is many people are very invested in the 1984 declaration that the consecration was accepted by heaven, that John Paul II accomplished it. A lot of people are very invested in that. It's just like, weirdly now, there are a lot of people invested in Francis having accomplished this.
Sure.
And Sister Lucia said rather bluntly that when it happens, there will be a radical conversion of Russia, that it will not be ambiguous, that it will be so obvious and so sudden that everybody will know that it was like heaven sent and that it was the Catholic Church that did that, basically was the instrument for it. But none of that happened. Not 1984, not 2022. In fact, how many consecrations of Russia or consecrations of the world were there before Francis's? There were several.
Absolutely.
And it was really, the implication is that, of course, this, you know, imposter would not have the ability to tell us whether heaven accepted such a thing or not. And that it really casts doubt into a lot of the motives behind these consecrations, if the popes involved knew, which I doubt John Paul II knew. I'm not, you know, I've never hidden the fact that I'm not exactly his biggest fan. The Assisi, it's hard to be, it's, you know, the Assisi things kind of make it hard, right? But I would doubt that he was in on this, but it comes down to a lot of people being attached to him and to the, to his Fatima consecrations. And because if it's an imposter, that means what? That his consecrations were probably invalid, even though, I mean,
they were certainly not done in the way that Our Lady asked, and that Lucy in the past emphasized it had to be done with all the bishops of the world, you know, specifically Russia, the consecration of Russia, not the world, but Russia.
And this is why I also am skeptical of the one Francis did.
Plus to bring about its conversion.
Right, not end of a war.
World peace is a consequence of the consecration and the conversion of Russia. It's not the main. Pacifistic peace is not, worldly peace is not the end of it. That's a fruit of it.
Right, there's an implication that when it's done, the errors of Russia that have spread around the world will be defeated. Which sounds like it will be messy, to put it mildly.
Sure, because
as people love to point out in my comment section, why are you so harping on the errors of Russia? America is the biggest promoter of these errors. I'm like, well, that's a whole other subject. The infiltration of the United States government by communists.
They spread throughout the world. I mean, they spread and infiltrated the entire world. And also, of course, the first Saturdays were supposed to be presented to the world and emphasized by the popes,
which was never happened.
Actual consecration. So that, of course, that didn't happen.
I used to promote the first Saturdays. I need to do another first Saturdays video soon. Sure. It's been a year at least since I've done one.
Sure.
But if you're seeing this and you've made it this far into this conversation and you have not kept the five first Saturdays devotion, please do so. There is, I've got videos on there. You can go search my archives for them. Sure. But you go and meditate on the mysteries of the rosary for 15 minutes after receiving communion, and you make sure you go to confession, and the church, using its authority, expanded how long you have to actually receive communion and go to confession to, like, I think 8 days on either side of that first Saturday. So you should be able to do that. Right. And you, after Mass, you spend 15 minutes meditating on the rosary, and you receive communion in reparation for very specific sins, all having to do essentially with Protestant heresies for the most part, and secular heresies and secular sliming of Our Lady.
Right.
Because, I mean, this is, it's key, and most Catholics don't do this. I've completed it once or twice, and I will tell you, and I do, I also tell people, go find a traditional parish to do this at, simply because the priest at those masses will offer the Mass for the intentions of the Five First Saturdays. Whereas if you go to a vigil Mass at your neighborhood parish, you're just not, that's just not going to happen. Right. But even these traditional parishes, they will be nearly empty.
Sure.
It'd be like 20 people there for those First Saturday Masses instead of the, 300 for the normal Mass.
Right.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at ikea-usa.com/circular. Visit ikea-usa.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
Yeah, it's a devotion that was supposed to go hand in hand with the consecration. Mm-hmm. And the real Sister Lucy emphasized over and over again that this was the case. It's not happening. It didn't happen. It hasn't happened since Sister Lucy was replaced. I mean, there's no doubt that a lot of apple carts, this information, which can be seen with your own eyes and our own eyes and looked at, and the reports looked at, it overturns. I mean, it causes us to rethink the whole history of the last 60 years in the church. Like, to think about it from another perspective, maybe it was darker, and maybe there was something more sinister going on than most people think. But, we tend to shy away from that idea, and, well, there's some things that are a little crazy that happened, but no.
It really does.
They didn't get rid of Sister Lucy for just little changes.
No, and I mean, at the end of the day, it puts a whole new light on what I generally refer to just as the infiltration thesis about what happened, leading up to and after Vatican II. Because you're not just dealing, I mean, heresy is evil. People forget, people really downplay this because we live in a culture that professes to value the marketplace of ideas and competing ideas and pluralism and all these other things. Sure. Heresy is evil. Yes. It's evil because it leads souls to hell.
Yes.
It's a fundamental misunderstanding of God and his nature. And
modernism is the heresy. Modernism is the synthesis of all heresies. And the real Sister Lucy would have pointed that out.
Right. And somewhere in Pascendi, St. Pius X tells you that not all people who hold to the heresy of modernism are heretics. And I would guess he would mean formal heretics, which kind of complicates the whole issue a little bit. But we are talking about real evil. And when you understand that heresy is evil, that knowingly holding to a heresy, knowingly rejecting the deposit of the faith and trying to supplant it with something else, when you recognize that as evil, you find yourself confronted with the question of what else would these people do?
Sure.
And again, I'm not saying that this was like a lot of the paridi at Vatican II, the seminarian at the time, Joseph Ratzinger, I doubt he wasn't involved in this, But there were problems, very deep problems in the church at the time. Annibale Bugnini has all been but confirmed to have been a Freemason. I mean, there was that nun who came out who said that he was a house cleaner, basically, in Vatican, and cleaned his rooms after he had been dismissed and found all sorts of Masonic stuff in there. right? Mm-hmm. And his council of people who made the new mass, they were Protestant ministers who were probably Masons themselves.
Right.
When you start thinking about these things logically, it leads to some pretty dark places about the implications about the state of the church and about what happened. And I'm not a set of a contest. I tend to disagree with their final conclusion, but I could see where this would take people there, you know, how someone would go there from here.
The implications are grave, no doubt, because you also have to think about the fact that God allowed this. God allowed this to happen. Our Lady allowed her messenger to be taken out in one way or another. That's pretty serious, which means pretty serious evil was involved in the whole process and in the act itself. And it makes you think, but it also makes you think of the fact that the power of the real Catholic religion, which Sister Lucy embodied, that would have stood as a shining light against all the dirty modernists who wanted to destroy the faith. It would have, she would have been the light which attracted all those who resisted the apostasy in the church. She would have been the light which would have attracted them. She would have been in constant contact with them, at least through letters, perhaps, or statements.
Which is why they silenced her in the 50s.
They silenced her, absolutely. And they put someone in her place who did everything the modernists wanted.
And you know what the thing is about it, though? She still is contacting people. Her messages is survived. There are the organizations like the Fatima Center, you know, guys like me who put their stuff up on YouTube, and others, people like you doing the work of trying to get to the bottom of this.
Sure.
Keep the message alive.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's the critical thing here. And you watching this at home or listening to this on Spotify or wherever you're listening to this can keep the message alive yourself by living the message, which is to repent of your sins, keep the first Saturdays, get enrolled in the Brown Scapular, pray the little office in addition to your rosary every day, make reparation for sins, and work on your sanctity and tell the truth about what's going on.
Sure.
Even if that leads you to places, you know, long drives to find a good mass on Sunday instead of one where you're going to be hearing the, you know, homily about, you know, the progressive political issues of the day. This is why my family and I drive a long distance every Sunday for mass, because there's a quote unquote reverent Novus Ordo 5 minutes from my house. But the homily you're going to hear every Sunday is immigration this and refugees that and all the rest of the secularist talking points. So why would I bother?
Right. It's it calls us to it's a wake up call. It's a wake up call. First of all, people have to inform themselves. Like, what happened? Mm-hmm. What happened? What is the evidence that something happened? Look at the evidence with your own eyes. That's the best judge, all right? Mm-hmm. We have scientific everything you'd want, but except for DNA, which one day we hope to get. So DNA evidence. That's going to be an accomplishment.
Getting something from either of the women will be difficult, probably be tough.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's going to be difficult.
So what do you say, though, to the people who say that the last couple of years in the world have made them very distrustful of experts in general? I understand that with the medical industry right now, but like broadly speaking, I don't quite understand.
Well, these are experts that had no agenda. All they did was answer a question that we asked. Is this the same woman? And you can look at the reports yourselves. They analyze, they don't talk about the theology involved in Fatima or the different groups that exist now that are arguing about the Latin Mass or anything. They don't talk about that at all. They talk about the nose and the jaw and the, you know, the relation between the eyes and the nose and
the shape of hairlines and things, yeah. About.
And the little lines in the writing, and that's what they're talking about. And they sign their names and they say that this is what we think. We're putting our reputations on the line, not because we care about where anyone's going to go with it, but it's just what we find. And that's all I wanted from them. That's all I asked them to do is, what is your judgment on this? And so people are going to take the facts in different way, but they can. But we have to just look at the facts, because I think they show something very shocking. But I think it's about time that we're shocked.
We're sleep. Most Catholics are sleepwalking. Even like hardline trads are sleepwalking right now. Is the feeling
we get comfortable in our groups. We become comfortable and not realizing that we're called upon to continue the church, the Catholic Church, against all enemies, and also, you know, against the world, the flesh, and the devil. And that's what Sister Lucy would want. That's what Fatima's about, ultimately.
Preserving the faith.
The Catholic faith. The miracle of the Son, one of the main things it was meant to do was confirm the truth of the Catholic faith.
Right, and it did. There were conversions practically on the spot.
On the spot, where people were begging for mercy and reciting the creed and in preparation for imminent death. So, no, this is very important. And thank you so much for letting Sister Lucy Truth express itself and our what our findings are. And, you know, hopefully your listeners and will go to our reports and just look at them themselves and look at the evidence and, you know, make your own judgments. But
I'll try to post a link to this in my sources blog, because YouTube doesn't like posting links to things for some reason. But I would be remiss if I didn't ask this, though, because somebody's going to ask me this. And there was reports that there was going to be a Fatima documentary that came out right around the time of that Fatima movie that I detest, by the way. The more I think about it, the more it makes me mad. Yes. But you remember the Fatima movie that came out 2020 or so?
Yes, I saw it, and I was gravely disappointed because it falls into the whole modernist idea that it makes it seem like the apparitions were really part of Sister Lucy's own consciousness somehow.
Right. So, really strange. But there was supposed to be like a third party documentary that was going to come out that was not going to be made by Catholics. These were going to be external people doing something, and I think, wasn't it going to touch on the identity of Sister Lucy, and then it just disappeared, didn't it?
Yes, we were working with, I'll just say this, we were working with a man who was trying to get this organized, and with people like Netflix and things like that. COVID hit. And so they gave the excuse of COVID, well, we're not filming anymore. And then we ended our relationship with that man. And so it just didn't go anywhere. But that doesn't mean we've done a lot on small time productions of, you know, what our story is, what our reports are, and what we're about. But we're still waiting for the big fish, the media big fish, and we're still waiting for that. And, you know, it would have been nice if it happened a few years ago, but we've been progressing. We haven't stopped. We're still investigating and getting reports and finding new things all the time out. So, but we're looking for a producer too. Do a big movie and blow this, show the whole world what's been found. And
that'll be an interesting day when you can do that. Me know if you ever do not a GoFundMe, but whatever the Christian one is. There's a Christian alternative to GoFundMe. And if you ever give Sendigo, I think is it. If you ever do something like that, let me know and I'll make sure to give you some
attention. Thanks so much.
Where can people find you besides that Sister Lucy Truth? I know you're also have a YouTube channel.
I write a blog. It's called called Rad Trad Thomist.
Okay.
And so you can, by going Rad Trad Thomist, you can see things I blog, and I put new Sister Lucy findings or videos up on that blog, along with other things, my own commentaries about world events and so on. But SisterLucyTruth.org, and SisterLucyFilms.org also, which presents some of our, you know, videos and, you know, trying to angle that movie, big movie in the future, hopefully. If anyone knows anybody, just send them our way. We can pull that off.
I actually might know some people. So
is that right? Well,
yeah, sort of.
Yeah, if you could
say it ended up making like
story of the century. We have a story of the century. You know, move over JFK. This has a spiritual punch to it. And it's incredible. It's incredibly sad. And, you know, we're sort of joking about it or, you know, like having to speak about it. But it's incredibly sad and incredibly, but it's also incredibly moving and, I don't know, spirit sublime almost. Like, she was a martyr.
Mm-hmm.
She was a martyr. Sister, the real Sister Lucy is a martyr. She died because, or she was.
She became the white crown of martyrdom by
white martyrdom,
silenced and imprisoned and squirreled away somewhere. The kind of people we're talking about probably wouldn't have limited it to that. They couldn't have risked it.
I don't think so. Personally, I don't think so. Because what if she ever got out? What if someone actually met with her who carried a message? Their whole edifice of lies would fall apart.
So the other place you can be found, there's a YouTube channel too, isn't there, for Sister Lucy Truth?
Yes. YouTube channel. Also, we have a Facebook page. Also, we're on Twitter, Sister Lucy Truth. So we try to put things up almost every day. And our website has been, you can have it translated into 110 different languages.
Nice.
Whatever language you speak, you can read our reports in.
Plus Google has a really terrible translating extension for Chrome. Sure. Yes. It works. It just sometimes it likes to repeat, like duplicate text.
Yes.
I've run into that problem before. Translating a Vigano letter from Italian that he only wrote police in Italian. Thanks for coming on with me today. And we'll reach out again if you have any major updates.
Sure.
Because we'll
absolutely
have another conversation, I think. Go check out his work over at Sister Lucy Truth and Rad Tried Thomist. And go to the YouTube channel and go follow that one, because you can dive deeper into specifics about things. And there are, you know, you can get, if you have very specific questions, it's probably a video on it. Anyway.
Absolutely.
Thank you for tuning in today. Let me know what you thought of this in the comments, please. And as always, pray for the church. I'm Anthony Stein. Ave Maria.